Mini episode 1824 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, so looking at night two, Easter Sunday, as it were, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, the tag champions versus Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. And basically, it's a makeshift tag team against Liv and Raquel. I don't think they're done with them on top at this point. Liv has grown into being a very good worker over a period of time. Used to be mid as heck, but has grown into being a very good worker. Raquel has always, I think, been at that point. You talk about, we talked about this with Rhea Ripley, you know, the Haas fight, you know, type fighter type thing. Raquel has always been believable to me in that role. And that, as I think I saw her note in an interview recently, this is sort of the second time in her career that she has sort of played diesel to somebody else's Shawn Michaels, and she seems delighted by that. Yeah, she seems delighted because she apparently was a big fan of, you know, the Diesel character back in the day. She's very good at it. She's like Diesel if Diesel could work, okay? So they're going to keep the belts on them. It's against the makeshift tag team. It'll be a pretty good match, but, you know, again, if this one opens night two, that would surprise me. Because, like, you mean to tell me you can't do better than this opening night two? So I'm dubious.
That's not opening night. That's not.
Wikipedia is probably wrong. Night two. Yeah.
Right. I can't see that opening night two. It's a pointless throwaway match. Like, I feel like, you know, Bayley deserves better. You know, if anything, Bayley should be facing Lyra Valkyria for the Women's Intercontinental Championship to boost that championship, if nothing else. And, you know, they could. I know I said earlier where, you know, they did bloated matches, but the women's tag team title might be one that calls for a bloated, like, you know, fatal four way or something kind of thing to do. So I am actually not opposed to the whole idea of just having two sets of tag team championships, one for the men, one for the women. Do it. You don't have a program, just do a fatal four way between each team. Both. I actually like that idea. Got people on the card, and it was inoffensive, and there was a build to it, especially the SmackDown tag titles for the men. It feels like a waste of time. For the amount of Liv you've singing her praises and Raquel, for the work they've done and improved, they just deserve a better spot, in my opinion, other than just something that's thrown in there. Heck, they would even be in a better position, in my opinion, if they were hosting WrestleMania as opposed to this match. But that's just me.
You know what I'd rather see even than that is you have two nights now. So you could do one night the Andre and one night the, what would it be, the Mae Young? But like, but put some real stakes on it. Put a world title match in there and then lard it in with a couple of bigger names like Sheamus and Randy Orton for the men and whatever. You got to seed it with a couple of like legit ones. Liv and Raquel would both be very believable in that role as world title contenders. Also, there would be the whole
a mid-card title, one of the mid-card titles, because the world title already has its build. I don't want to do a world title thing on the actual show because then it would negate the build to the actual world title.
I mean, a future world title shot.
Oh, I was thinking you were saying,
Okay. The stakes
I like that idea.
The stakes are for a future world title match. And that's where
I like that idea.
But they never did it that way with the Andre or with the Mae Young one, because I think they named it after Mae Young after they decided they couldn't name it after Bula anymore, whatever they did with it. No, but anyways,
they just called it the Women's WrestleMania Battle Royale. Okay.
Because here was the whole thing. Vince just decided, well, everybody that attends is mid-carders, so it won't be believable if it's not. But like now you have enough, you know, again, you know, name wrestlers like, you know, Randy Orton and Sheamus. I keep coming back to that here. By the way, Randy Orton, supposedly they're going to throw together a match with him and Nick Aldis one of these nights here. So Nick Aldis, God bless him, will get his moment in the sun.
Is it going to be Nick Aldis? Because I don't think it's going to be Nick Aldis. I think it's going to be somebody else. But the question I got kind of put on with that is I could see them debuting somebody, but as we've noticed with the WWE, when something happens against, and I'm going to use Brock Lesnar's situation as a prime example, into his spot at the Royal Rumble. They didn't change any of the script. The script for this, I'm pretty sure, was, and this is just me free balling, I guess, guessing on this one, that it was going to be Sami Zayn coming back to help Randy Orton defeat Kevin Owens. Orton was going to look strong and to lead into backlash in St. Louis, and then on pay-per-view for the last time, we would get Randy, spoilers here, we would get Randy Orton versus John Cena. However, if the argument with, you have to bring somebody in that would still have to lose to Randy. So I could see it being Aldis in that situation. I think that would be a letdown because guys like us, we know who the national treasure is, but that audience has no idea that he is a longtime professional wrestler. And I mean, and they don't have enough time. They could show, thanks to the, you know, the TNA relationship, they could show footage of who he was. But then it just looks like Randy Orton's beating up an old guy.
He's beating up Magnus. He wasn't even Nick Aldis when he was there. He was Magnus. Now, I think Magnus might have been world champion at some point, but his peak was as the NWA champion. And they don't have the rights to the NWA stuff.
Right.
This isn't 1998 anymore.
Any of that stuff. So,
yeah.
So my thought, my thought going into it's like, you know, you know, if you do Randy Orton versus a mystery opponent, but then the mystery opponent would have to like deliver on the surprise and they would have to go over because if not, they're dead in the water.
Yeah.
Coming into it. Now, a great one for that would be in a perfect spot if you have, and you could get to Randy Orton and John, you could have Randy Orton lose here and still have him face Cena. They could get to that if ultimately that is the plan.
That's like Ryback losing to Mark Henry and then getting the shot at John Cena the next month. I mean,
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying there's ways to get to it because let's say this is the spot where they re-debut Aleister Black, right?
Okay.
He'd have to win or he's dead.
Okay.
Same thing. And another one that I think would be really good, like the one I personally would like to see is a returning Rusev in this spot. Because I think out of those two, he is the more well-established and well-known name to the WWE audience. And I would think it'd be, you know, have him come out with it's WrestleMania, so go all the way on this one. Have him come out with the horns blaring. Have the actual people, like the guys blowing the horns, come out there like Miro's AEW entrance was and do a take. Because Miro in AEW was fantastic. The Redeemer. Yeah. I loved it. He's one of those guys that, you know, was just very poorly used in that company for whatever the reason is. We don't know. I don't know job, what it was,
though.
But
he didn't want a job though. That was, you know.
Well, you're not going to have. I don't think he wants a job there at all. No, apparently.
Well,
hey,
well,
you know, true. You get paid millions of dollars, but like, that version, because we've under this new administration, they have shown they're willing to let guys come in with their AEW characters. Sean Spears is essentially his AEW character. Cody Rhodes is 100% his AEW character. So a thing where Rusev comes back as a repackaged Rusev, as the Redeemer Rusev, and just goes in there as that version of that character so that you know he's something different. You have the horns blow, and then you do the Rusev intro, and I think the crowd would go absolutely crazy for it.
Yeah,
because it's a surprise and somebody new coming back. That's just a thought of what you can do with, you know, with Randy. That is a pivot from what was obviously what was going to take place. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be a spot. I mean, unless I am, but I don't think I'm going to be a spot on this one with the audible that had to be called for the Money in the Bank cash in. But I can see them doing this. Is just an opportunity, I think, for them to debut somebody and make an immediate star. Because if you debut somebody and they beat Randy Orton at WrestleMania, that shows, you know, hey, the company is behind you.
Well, I will say too that per some of the stuff you said before, as far as not liking AEW, not liking the flippy stuff anymore. So clearly you are leaving behind the Jake Digman, who along with myself was the fifth Beatle of Sunday Night Submission back in the 2000s here. You know, the new Jake Digman who likes King Kong Bundy versus Uncle Elmer. So I'm not surprised that you forego the smart mark thing here. You know what all the smart marks are predicting is going to happen, don't you? Don't you know who all the smart marks think? Jeff Cobb debuting here. That's who some people are thinking it's going to be. It won't be,
and
by the way.
Everyone's
going
to respond back and say, who in the hell is Jeff Cobb? It won't be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
it won't
who
be.
Is now? If it was Hansa Cueto, I would lose my, I would lose every, that mark out super for that one. Oh, that'd be great.
Like,
I'm like, yes.
Can you call him Jeff Cobb and still kind of costume him a certain way? Like, that would be awesome.
It's like, I mean, Jeff Cobb, if Jeff Cobb would be, I hate to say this to him, but he's going to go the NXT route only because that audience is, that's their smart mark audience, is not as much as it used to be when it was Black and Gold brand, but it's still, you know, that's the, you know, the partnership with TNA and the, you know, things you never thought you'd see, people showing up on different champions on different, that very much caters to the smart mark audience. I could see Jeff Cobb debuting somewhere in there, maybe even, you know, how they used to do it at East. I could see Jeff Cobb sitting ringside during Stand and Deliver.
Well, also, too,
that's how they used to like debut, like the big, you know, big signees.
Well, NXT 2.0, which you and I all said at one point in time, is actually more like NXT 4.0 when you look at the history of it. But whatever this version of NXT is, it still has an inordinate amount of green guys down there. They're not as big on the indie vet scene as they were, you know, 2020 and before. So a guy who is, I mean, Jeff Cobb is an excellent worker. Jeff Cobb is a guy that can get in there and be a stabilizing veteran force in many matches. I agree that's probably where they'll send him. I think that's probably undervaluing his contribution to the company, but I think that's how they'll use him. He's not debuting at WrestleMania against Randy Orton. Sorry, smart marks.
The other problem, too, is name one Jeff Cobb promo.
Yeah, I mean,
You need that to survive in WWE.
Yeah.
They're very prominent. I cannot tell you how shocked I was when I saw Penta speak English. I'm like, he can talk.
True. Yeah. Why wasn't he doing this before? Yeah. I've seen some of Cobb's New Japan promos. I mean, they're not bad, but you know, he is going to have to step that up. No question about it. When you talk about the kind of, you know, indie veterans that once populated the NXT scene, a lot of them were guys like AJ Styles, who was deemed to be big enough when he came in to skip NXT. He went right to the main roster in 2016. And I look at this match with Logan Paul, where he's clearly here to put him over. And I kind of do the dividing lines here on the AJ Styles timeline in the Fed here, because I think 2016 to 2020, I mean, I think you could probably put together a DVD of his best stuff that would be, it might rival the entire time previous combined. It might, you know, turn of the century to when he came into the Fed. You might have as much great stuff in those couple of years as you had in all of his pre-Fed stuff. But that, I mean, the match where he was buried by The Undertaker is almost symbolic, because the last couple of years, like when he hasn't been hurt, he's been in spots where he's just basically there to make other guys look better. And it just, he's at the like, let's use his remaining name value to give a rub to this guy or that guy or whatever. And it's a shame, because he can still go at, you know, maybe not even 90% of what AJ Styles used to be, because 100% of what AJ Styles used to be is probably on a short list of the greatest wrestlers ever. But it's just, I see something like this and I'm just sad. Like, he's here to put over, and I'm showing my age, you know, get off my lawn guy, but he's here to put over a YouTube guy. And I understand it's a YouTube guy that works hard and can do great matches, and I'm being worked as far as how obnoxious of a douche I think he is. I realize I'm being worked to some degree, but I mean, this match just makes me sad. This match in a nutshell is why I prefer AEW, because you won't ever see one of the best guys in AEW getting fed to a YouTube guy.
The irony of you calling him a YouTube guy as this video is going to go on YouTube is not lost on me, sir. Just so you,
I'm not wrestling in Vegas this Sunday.
if you got the call, you would.
That's neither here
my
nor
problem
there.
With this. My problem with this match is I've watched every single, you know, Raw and SmackDown, you know, in the build to this. I have no idea why this match is happening. From a storyline perspective and from an actual match perspective, this is a waste of both AJ Styles and a waste of Logan Paul, in my opinion. I think AJ Styles would better assume, if I haven't faced a young guy, okay. face someone you're building towards in the future on this one. And part of the appeal on the other side of this with Logan Paul is the promo work back and forth. AJ Styles, he's a lot of great things about him, but no one will say he's one of the best promos in the business. Right. He can carry himself, but he's not on that level. Like, this is a point where, like, you know, in the build, I would, especially, you know, when they were did at the Rumble and everything, like a CM Punk in this position would have been absolutely that would have been the gotten that crossover appeal that, you know, and those two going back and forth on the mic. Just imagine, like, you know, Logan Paul saying Logan Paul stuff and, like, you know, oh, and Punk responding back with, we missed you on the tour of Japan. Where were you? Just stuff like that, you know, like the little jabs that he would do. I felt would have been better utilized and had more of a WrestleMania feel to it. This just feels like, okay, these guys can have a good match. Let's put them in there to have a good match. Well, but there's no, there's no reason for it. It was like Logan Paul just come on the show one day and go, AJ Styles talk trash about me. I'm like, no, he didn't. That never happened. Yeah. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, well, there was no paths crossed, nothing. They didn't cross paths on the Rumble. There's absolutely, I mean, maybe an elimination chamber. I don't remember, but like, literally, it was nothing. It was just like, okay, well, we don't have anything to do with this guy. It reminds me of Triple H and The Undertaker from WrestleMania 17 when they realized that neither one of them had a match like a week before the show. So they gave him a match.
Well, and here's the thing, too, that when you look at this, and I'm going to get deep in the weeds making this point, but you're one of the guys I can get deep in the weeds with as far as this. Promo-wise, I agree with you about AJ Styles. I think he's very similar to another all-time great worker, Bret Hart, where
I was going to say the same thing.
Wow, okay. So here's – all right, so you're going to see exactly where I'm going. Both of them doing heel promos, you wouldn't worry about them at all. Or if they're right off a turn, right, you have like the heel residue. There's a time like when guys turn face, but they still, it's the best of both worlds. They're a face and the crowd can cheer them, but they've still got, you know, the heel swagger to them. So if AJ Styles had some of the heel residue to him, that he could bring that attitude to a promo, but he's basically been sort of like a lukewarm face over a period of time. And it just... he doesn't have any of the persona. Like AJ Styles, when he was at his peak as a heel in this promotion, he was giving promos that were perfectly cromulent. But I mean, you get to this point now and it's just, he's not, you know, really going to give the promos that are going to, you know, get, you know, convince you to really kind of stay with it. And the whole thing too, is that like, it's supposed to be, well, AJ Styles is representing the sanctity of the squared circle against this Logan Paul guy. But like Logan Paul is still, and this is why, again, if there's anybody who single-handedly is like a poster child of why I prefer AEW, it's a thing of like, I realized that like, even after Triple H took over, it was only ever going to be a ceiling of not, you know, not sports entertainment and more pro wrestling being put in. There's always going to be a ceiling because of the commercialization of it and who they're selling to and whatever. And Logan Paul represents that ceiling. And the story that they're telling is that like AJ Styles is representing the sanctity of wrestling against Logan Paul. Ostensibly, I think they're telling this story, but Logan Paul's the poster child for it. He's got his freaking ads on the ring mat. Okay. This guy is supposed to be the guy with his ads on the ring mat, the guy to Triple H in and out of character is praising as being bringing so much to the company in terms of eyeballs. Like, this is not how you do an outsider storyline, Jake Digman. This is not how you do a storyline of the guy defending the sanctity of a squared circle. Not at all. It doesn't match up to the reality of the situation here.
I agree with that. My problem with it is that's every Logan Paul match story. Yeah. They're all defending the sanctity of the squared circle, you know? LA Knight, when he was going for the United States Championship, it's all about the sanctity. You're an outsider. Rey Mysterio against Logan Paul. You're an outsider, you know? Every single thing since he's become a quote-unquote part-time wrestler has been, that's it. That's the whole story. There's nothing beyond that, which it's like, okay, if you're going to do that, then at least do it where it's something interesting. And the problem, this goes back to AJ Styles, it's inconsistency. He was a heel feuding with LA Knight, got hurt, and then came back, and for some odd reason never explained, he's just a babyface now. He's like, you know what, I just realized I was wrong. And they have been doing this whole thing of like in the build of this, where like Karrion Kross has been telling AJ Styles he needs to like, you know, do his evil ways. Now, a thing like go back to his evil ways, which was a reference to his TNA character that he had down mm-hmm. there. It would be cool. I don't see him doing it, but it'd be really cool if he came out to his Get Ready to Fly TNA theme and was like that AJ Styles, just like, okay. You know, that he'd never happened. It's the same guy. You just change the music, have the hood up, and make him TNA AJ Styles for yeah. late, and like, you know, have do the whole evil ways and like get ready to fly. And then like, you know, mm-hmm. oh, we've never seen this version of AJ Styles in the WWE. It's the same guy, just, you know, because it's WrestleMania. So they got to do something that is, you know, to freshen, shake things up a little bit. It just, I don't know. I'm just like, the build to this has been so lackluster. Like, again, the match is going to be great. They're going to do moves and they're going to have false finishes and the crowd's going to chant, this is awesome. And it's going to be fun. And it'll probably get 3.5 stars, but it's just like how we got to this. It just right. seems so trite.
Well, the other thing is too, if you go to do something subtle like that, like referencing the TNA background, whatever, don't forget the reason that you can't really pull that off. And that reason is you have the Art Donovan of the 2020s, i.e. Pat McAfee, on commentary, and he's just going to sit there and crap on it. I don't get it. Did this guy used to be different or something? He's just going to sit there and do that whole thing and basically ruin it, like he ruined so much with his commentary. So, you know, that's with his whole dumb jock crap. So, just a thought.
That's funny. So, Pat McAfee's the only reason why Keita will watch Raw. When he's not on, she can't stand it. She says to me, and I kind of, he comes across as a real person watching it, as opposed to a, like they're like rehearsed. Like all the other guys sound like they're doing corporate shill, and he's the only one that sounds like he has a job outside of here. So he just says what he actually thinks. I actually like McAfee because it's a change of pace and it's completely different than the cookie cutter pro wrestling commentators that have always done the same thing over and over and over and over again. And not everything is for everyone. I get that. I'm not going to try to sell you on them.
Yeah.
I just, because it's something different. I'm not saying everything is, you know, hits it out of the park every single time, but I you know, there's just, it just feels real. And a lot of other times they come across to me as, you know, especially in the WWE, it comes across as like, you can tell they're reading the script and no one gives good or bad. No. It doesn't sound like McAfee has a script.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first you'd have to learn how to read, right? So there's that impediment, but you know, yeah. So
you're just not a fan of the Colts, are you? Wow.
I don't know. I'm just not a subscriber to the whole shtick. I guess, I don't know. Call me a hater.
I get it. It's fine. It's, you know, the same reason I can't watch AEW is because I think Excalibur is grating and annoying. And he's just like, oh my God, they did this in front of 17 people in PWG in 2012. No one cares. No one saw it. No one cares other than the 12 people who were there going, oh my God, he referenced this one match in 2012 that these two, no one saw it, which I know is irony because I just said a big reference to his TNA character. I know what I just did there before you call me out on it, on the hypocrisy.
Will it shock you to know as a back
to it, but I
as somebody that loathes McAfee's commentary, would it shock you to know that I love Excalibur's commentary?
it wouldn't shock me at all. See, it's like two different sides of the coin on that.
Yeah.
I mean, like I tried for the longest time and he just comes across as like, for me, Excalibur comes across as like, oh, you didn't know this happened? You're an idiot. How dare you not know these two had a 5-star match at New Japan's Reckoning 2019. You didn't realize that? Well, they got like Meltzer who's just like eating this crap up and just like, yeah, you gotta like do your research. No. Oh, people who are watching aren't going to do the research and not going. That's why AEW is at the peak of numbers they will be at. They have their audience. They're never going to grow from it just because of that. If for the people who like that sort of thing, that's the thing you guys like. Cool. You know, I'm not knocking it. It just, the shows they did without him on there, when they had like Rick Abani and everything, I think it's great because he doesn't come across like, you know, making you feel like an idiot to me. It's two different sides. I get your whole point of like, you know, Mac, if you come across as a dumb jock too, I'm not disagreeing with you. You're absolutely right. It's just whatever you like.
Well, I'm a pro wrestling elitist, so I'm down with with Excalibur. Let me mimic putting a mask on here and support.
It's like kind of like Matt Stryker when he first got into WWE and he had a lot of smart references. And I, at the time, I was like, oh yeah, I love this. But now every time I hear that they show the clip of Booker T coming back at the Rumble and you hear him going, I'm marking out, bro. I'm marking out. It's just so cringe. It's so cringe. I'm like, oh, just delete that. It's so bad. Like, yeah. Over in real time, I used to love the guy. Thinking like, oh, speaking of Stryker, yeah. That is like he offered different, fresh insight, and then he became in front of our eyes a caricature of himself, which was wild. And then, yeah, and then as a result of at the end of it, he couldn't get a gig anywhere. Go figure.
Yeah, and he had you saying as you're watching it, delete your life account. at the risk of sounding too smart, Markish, the poster child for what we've been talking about as far as randomness on the card would be the next one, the Fatal 4-Way for the Intercontinental Championship, Bron Breakker the champion versus Penta versus Finn Balor versus Dominic Mysterio. And the smart money on the street seems to point towards Dominic Mysterio coming away with the Intercontinental Championship in some kind of screw job kind of a finish here. So I could see that being the case. That way you don't directly job Bron Breakker to him, which I know that they're not going to want to do. But, I mean, there's got to be a better way to get from here to there. And then Finn Balor, that's another thing, too. I kind of lump him in with Nakamura as like a guy that they should have done so much more with along the way. And it's too late now. I mean, it's kind of like with AJ Styles. Even if they wanted to rehabilitate AJ Styles, it's too late now. Like, there's a couple of guys that should still be on the main event fringes here. Finn Balor's never even won a world title in the split title era. Oh, the one night. Okay. All right. Well, never got. Okay. All right, well, the one night and never gotten it. You're
that
absolutely
was,
that right.
That was amazingly. First, that was it. That was his peak. It's just so sad because NXT
Fruit Roll-Up
was amazing.
Yes. We were laughing at the Brooklyn crowd calling it the Fruit Roll-Up. Yes. But he's never gotten
a Roll-Up championship.
He's never been back.
Never even close because he got hurt in that spot. Put in that spot, he got hurt and they never had faith in him ever again, which is sad.
Right. And
his Bowman again, his time has passed. He's a guy that I could see getting an AEW run here sooner than like when this digs up.
Why would Tony Khan bother?
Because he's marked for guys that wrestled in Japan and the whole reuniting the Bullet Club guys, having the whole story of those guys all like to work with each other over and over again. It's always the same AEW's, guys working with the same people on repeat like that.
AEW's just too see, crowded at the top. They're too. You can't put him in there and put him in the main event picture. They're too crowded at the top, anyways. So
we'll see. It just seems like a lot of guys that once they age out of WWE, somehow end up in AEW.
Yeah, very, very.
A lot
possibly.
Of guys are that. That's happened to a lot of guys. Nakamura and Finn Balor are two guys at some point. I'm not saying because he probably has a few years left on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy I could see doing a run. And it'd be good. The prince is back kind of thing. But I just wasted potential they had with him. They had a chance to make him into a star. WWE, yeah. I mean, they had a chance to make him into a star when he first came in, and they never did. And now he is just at the point of where he's going to be. But I do want to touch on something else that I talked to you about last year, and we were doing this. And you're talking about how the whole idea was to make Dragon Lee, I think it was, into the next Hispanic lucha star for WWE. Yes. I'm doubling down on you. It is Dominic Mysterio is the next future Hispanic star for the WWE. I'm doubling. Dom is one of my favorite wrestlers in the world right now to watch on any show. Okay. His character, which it's hilarious if you'd have told me raised goofy looking kid would have been one of my favorites to watch, but he has become that. He is the way he has improved in front of our very eyes has been nothing short of amazing to me. And the matches did there, and he has become the guy that they go to that, it's going to put on a good match with somebody. He can play that ridiculous, cowardly, snidey heel. And he can also put up, he had a match with Gunther not too long ago that the crowd actually got behind Dom and thought for a second Dom was going to win, which just shows, how much of his ability, in my opinion, has improved, in my opinion. And now comes the part where you vehemently disagree with me.
Well, and again, and this is where people are going to accuse me of being tribalistic for mentioning AEW in a superior light so many times during this show. But everything you said about that guy being the sniveling little heel and everything like that, the closest counterpoint I can think of to that in AEW is Kyle Fletcher. And a million times out of a million, I would rather watch Kyle Fletcher matches. Call me a mark for, oh, 7 stars in the Tokyo Dome, bruv. But I mean, AEW's version of it is somebody that I'd much rather watch as far as cocky, sniveling heel who can actually go out there and tear the house down. And Dominic Mysterio is fine as a character and everything like that. But this is a character company. And that's kind of like, if you prefer the characters, if you prefer, and like, you know, you were there last year at what I call Story Slam. You got to see the stories play out, bruv. And the match was not so much, but you had some big turns and a big return in the main event with Roman Reigns. You got to see moments when you were at Cleveland Stadium. You would have gotten to see 4- and 5-star matches if that was
4- and 5-star matches to who? To who? Some little tribalistic people in their sitting in their house? Some guy in California that everyone put his opinion on a pedestal because they can flip out and they don't know when to freaking finish? It's like they like don't know when to climax. That's my problem with the AEW. They never know when to finish the damn match. They just keep going and going and going.
Too many
going.
False finishes.
And then it's just like, okay, false finishes. Dude, and then Kyle Fletcher. I couldn't tell you who that guy was on a lineup. I know he's Will Ospreay's friend and he shaved his head. It's big
one
deal.
Half
he
goes Aussie out open, just, bruv. One half off. Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know, to compare the two on that, if I were to compare, you know, him to anybody in AEW would be MJF, that being Dominic Mysterio. That's who, okay. I would compare to.
I'd still take MJF, I mean, easily, hands down.
Oh, I would take MJF too. He's the, you know, I can't wait. MJF is right now the smartest man in wrestling. He's taking a billionaire's money and sitting there waiting for his deal to be up so that he can go once all the stuff is freed and get a big money spot. I don't blame him. MJF is not long term in AEW. I can tell you that. He will leave at some point. I will bet the farm on that one. So and it's going to be sooner than later.
Night 3 of a 4-night thing in a warehouse somewhere, right?
Yes, so, maybe, yeah. Maybe, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it is, you know, WWE for a reason. And plus, these guys, Cody's there. He's got his boys there. I very much see him at some point going, making the jump over to the WWE because I just – his character's tailor-made for that, but that's we could do a whole other podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A conversation so, on that, on those guys.
Well, your boy yeah, Dom's like, going over. Dom's going to get her done.
That'd be cool. I as long as Braun doesn't go get him.
Yeah. Well, if I was to say that there
so
was...
Dom's going to pin Finn because that's the only one that bigger.
Okay, yeah, probably, yeah. And that'll further the breakup storyline and tell a story, bruv, you know. So there you go.
I find it interesting that you work till two different sides of wrestling fans on this one, okay? You don't like the way you were talking about it, you don't like stories. And I'm the opposite.
No.
I don't like
I
watching a
stories.
Match for the sake of a match.
I love stories, but like, I don't love a story funny, for I want stories and matches. I feel like I'm getting both with AEW. I want stories and matches. But like in WWE, it's matches Uber all, or it's, I'm sorry, it's stories Uber all, you know, all. It's a thing of like, it's only there to serve the purpose of a moment, of a story being told and everything like that versus I want them to go hand in hand. I truly do. I feel like AEW gets pigeonholed in that way. You want stories, but you want matches that are worthy of the stories. And the thing is this, like, I guess you could say, so you've evolved since the Sunday Night Submission days. I guess I haven't. I'm kind of the same guy I was then. All the criticisms I was making at the time, I'm making now, basically. So, you know, some folks evolve,
see,
some folks
funny,
do not.
When you mentioned Story Slam, I laugh because at that one, I consider that show for mm-hmm. everything that happened in the ring and the experience I had personally.
Okay.
It's one of the top three live events. Like, and I've been to WrestleMania 20. I was at 4 WrestleManias. That is the most fun I've ever had with my friends at a wrestling show. I had so much fun because something happened. Okay. I know you're looking at me like, I can't believe you'd say that. Something happened in every single match. It was, it progressed something up, not just, hey, they had a match and the guy won and moved on. Like, that's my issue. It's like, you know, the quote unquote five-star matches don't mean anything because they don't, it doesn't, like, you forget about them a week later. Like, I still remember, like, that moment of Dirty Dom turning healer on Rhea Ripley and the crowd reaction, everybody losing their minds, like, oh my God, this is great. Like, you know,
but here's, I'll take here's that over like.
Random guys having a five-star match that the next week doesn't mean anything.
But I don't like matches where it's just, I don't like matches where it's just filling time until the thing happens. What's wrong with having a match that evolves into a thing happening?
That's every match in AEW to me. Literally every match in AEW to me. It's just, they're wrestling for the sake of wrestling. He puts all his toys back out, this guy's going to face this guy. The booking reminds me of me when I was 12 with my action figures, and I have them laid out, and then, okay, we did this show, and now we're going to do it again. Like, there's no you're going to tell me there is, and I haven't watched in a while, because it would just be like, it's the same thing, which is, you know, I guess WWE does it too. I don't know. It just, I think AEW does, they just do matches for the sake of matches. And I don't think one story rarely leads into another, in my opinion. And everything always just comes back to the guys in the Elite.
Okay.
No, listen, always. Hey. And this whole Moxley thing is just cringeworthy. It's unwatchable.
Not the finest moment. I'll give you that. The whole stuff with the Death Riders has been a miss.
Yeah,
I'll give you that.
I like so many guys in AEW. I just think Tony Khan is burnt out as a booker and should let somebody else take over in a different direction.
Or at least strongly contribute. But yeah,
I think it's like, it's the same. Right.
I'm not defending everything.
It's the exact same thing that was happening in 2020. In 2021 is the exact same thing that's happening in 2025.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have my criticism.
Chris Jericho
of the product
does the same regurgating crap. It's the same thing.
I do have my criticisms.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I remember I messaged you and I said I could watch Eddie Kingston and Daniel Bryan go at it all. Bryan Danielson go at it all night. I love that match. That was great.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of wrestling I enjoy that. Because the story, it's my problem I have a lot of times that WWE does this is when they don't sell anything. There's no psychology. It's just video games. Get your moves in, and no one sells anything. You get hit with something, you get right back up again. Will Ospreay gets hit with seven different moves. And I'm like, you should be dead, dude. Sell something.
Here's where,
and then Dave Meltzer's like, five stars.
I'm going to be very, very, very unbiased here. And I'm going to say this. There was another match where this happened, but I remember it particularly. So it happened twice. I only remember the one match. The one match where it happened, it was Sammy Guevara and MJF. And I don't remember which one hit it. It was a tombstone pile driver off the second rope for a two count. And I'm just like,
right.
You got to be kidding me. So I have some of the same criticisms, Jake. I have some. I mean, I don't. Right. I'm not as upset as you are, but I have some of the same criticisms. Well,
upset by it. I actually enjoy our back and forth. This is actually really fun. I'm not upset by it. I'm just it's a good point counterpoint to it.
Yeah,
that's the reason why. Other than fans like yourself, no one watches it. The numbers don't lie. More people have stopped watching AEW, and AEW has done nothing to get them to go back up.
It's inching. It's inching up if you pay attention to the numbers here. So it's, you know, not dramatic yet. It probably won't be dramatic until...
And I want
them
to succeed.
It's going to be around for years to come. By the way, you might have heard, as of this week, it's been on the air longer than Nitro. Suck on that, Eric Bischoff. So there is that part of it as well. But, you know, but
low,
looking...
Low-hanging fruit there.
Yeah. All right, so looking at the remainder of the night two card here, I said night one, there's only one legitimate semi-main. Night two, I'm going to tell you flat out, there's not a legitimate semi-main. There's just the main event. And so having said that, if there was going to be one, it would be this one, based on the star power of the two guys involved. But Damian Priest, Drew McIntyre, thrown together. It's something where, again, you could have told more of a full-fledged story over a longer period of time. Damian Priest, the guy who plucked Drew McIntyre's moment last year. Drew McIntyre spent the whole year blaming CM Punk for it, but it could have also been, you know, an element of, yeah, oh, by the way, Damian Priest as well, you know, taking that to kind of cash in on me. They've made it a Sin City street fight just to try and juice it up a little bit, but like, Damian Priest is not a guy who was really elevated that much by being the world champion. You were there at Story Slam last year. He only became a full-fledged face in his final match as champion. He was basically a tweener, pseudo-face, basically in there during that run. And it's interesting because I've seen him for a long time as sort of heir to the kind of Razor Ramon thing, beyond doing the whole, you know, finishing maneuver thing, being a tall guy who can work well and move well and whatever. But it's like, I don't know. He looks like he's going to be stuck at Razor Ramon's spot on the card, which in his case was never main event. Drew McIntyre, I think, clearly is going over here because he's the one they see more in. He's the one they're going to be doing more with in the near to immediate term. And again, this match, you know, like the old Triple H plunder matches back in the day, it'll be decent, but, you know, to pretty good. But I don't know. To me, it is what it is.
Drew McIntyre has been doing the best work, and he deserves a better spot at WrestleMania.
Uh-huh.
This is absolutely thrown together. In my opinion, Drew should have been in a much more high-profile match on the card. Again, is what it is. I just don't see Damian. They're trying to pay Damian Priest is at that level, and I just don't see it. I agree with what you said. He's like, you know, he is where he's going to be, and he's again, he's not getting any younger. Like, well, I believe he just passed the 40 threshold.
Jake, here's the thing. You look at it, and I think, and this is even a guy like me who's a lot of times a critic of their stuff. I look at the card this year, and I'm just like, gee whiz, I thought the top of the card was deeper than this. Like, you say Drew McIntyre should be working with somebody, you know, more deserving of being in there with him. No slight on Priest, but he was not, like I said, elevated by being world champion. Like, who? Who would that's you pick problem. Out of this? Who? Who's worthy of being in there with Drew McIntyre
that's
out of
the
this
problem.
It's not as deep as I thought it was, dude. So it's like, so they
no,
have to make
it's absolutely not. It's like, yeah. That it you got to work with what you're given. I thought they were going to do Drew McIntyre and LA Knight personally. I thought that's what the build was going to be towards, and like get Drew like that. But I, you know, it is what it is.
yeah, I guess, you know. But the next match here, you know, you talked about this before. Io Sky, who is ironically the women's world champion, shoehorned into the match. It should be Bianca and Rhea Ripley. This match. Were it for the Women's World Championship without Io Sky. And I'm an Io Sky fan. And I think, again, she's a very exciting wrestler and everything, but she's out of place in this match. Bianca and Rhea is a match they'd held off on for a long time. You end up getting it here in this form. This is a match that would be a legitimate semi-main for night two of WrestleMania. And they blow it. And it's one of those things where it just... This is the cowardly booking of they don't want Bianca or Rhea to go down to the other one here. So Io's in there clearly just to eat the pinfall. From who? I don't know. Maybe Rhea based on the way that they seem to be setting her up as a bit of a pretender to even be in there. So maybe that in the end, I got the last laugh. I'm the champ. I don't know. And I don't really care. And I wouldn't say that if it was Bianca and Rhea because that would tear the house down.
I agree with you. Everything you just said right there. I think the only story in this is that Rhea Ripley has never beaten Io Sky. So I guess that's the finale we're going with here. But it was something that story is like, I never knew that kind of thing. Okay. That's the build that Rhea Ripley has never pinned Io Sky, which is really funny looking back to NXT and everything. Yeah. So, okay, that's what we're doing. But if that's the case, then Bianca feels like the third wheel on added to it. The money match was Bianca and Rhea. They've kept them apart for so long, and the fact that they didn't do it here on a show that we've just said is desperately calling out for some kind of big money matches. And, you know, this is a card where if they were still trying to sell this based on the card, this wasn't good on paper. This is one of, like, the worst cards ever. But that's not to say it's not going to deliver, but it's just like randomizer.
Jake, you want me to give some clickbait here? I'll give you some clickbait. The question going into this card is whether WrestleMania 9 will still be the worst WrestleMania from Las Vegas at the end of Sunday night.
That's a pretty good one.
How's that for clickbait? Know,
WrestleMania
huh?
9. That's a good one. WrestleMania 9, I like how you added in from Vegas, because yeah. I don't think WrestleMania 9 is the worst WrestleMania of all time. I think that WrestleMania, what's
11
from Atlanta?
Was 11
was worse, and the one from Atlanta was worse. The one with the
27? Really?
27, like, that was terrible. That was a terrible show.
It wasn't great, but I don't know if 27 was one of the worst. I don't know. I mean, was it?
Don't forget 7. Also terrible. One and two are terrible. Yeah. One gets a pass because it's the first one. Yeah. Two is awful.
Seven.
And three not... outside of two match. Seven? Yeah, seven's pretty bad. Too.
Seven was
three
dog crap.
Three is a two match show.
Seven was dog crap. Yeah. And it four? Was a thing. four.
A lot of bad ones in there.
Five and six were not deep at the very least. Five and six had main events, but they weren't deep. So, yeah, we could be critical all night here. But a guy who has been a big part of WrestleMania history, John Cena, going for title number 17, the undisputed WWE Championship against Cody Rhodes. And maybe we'll hear something about The Rock during WrestleMania here, which we haven't since Elimination Chamber. So that whole thing, the way that it went down, the whole turn here. This is one of these things where, again, to go back to the previous match here, like with Io Sky, if we see Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley matched up on an upcoming pay-per-view here, and they don't call pay-per-views anymore, whatever, you know what I mean, Peacock show, then my theory right. about holding things back for different points during the year will make sense. They might look at it like, look, we already sold out WrestleMania, who gives a crap? And we're going to have Rhodes and Cena in the main event. So if they're going by the old school thing of once you sell a house out, once you've made all the money, anything else you do is superfluous, then this match is being counted on to carry a disproportionate part of the card, because it's this match, it's the main event Saturday night, and it's to whatever degree you want to believe the Gunther-Jey Uso match. And then nothing else really matters, it seems like. There's a disproportionate amount of importance on this match, on this show. They haven't even really touched on, and I used to, even on Sunday Night Submission back in the day when I would make some points here. I mean, I must have been the biggest smart mark of all, because I would make points and some of you other guys would be like, oh, geez, Rick, who's even going to care about that? But like, I'll say this, John Cena, you know, you look at the part-time era that's been so unsuccessful for him, that's been part of the storytelling. Where did that really kind of begin? When he came back in Las Vegas, SummerSlam in 2021, and laid down that challenge to Roman Reigns. And ultimately in the match, subsequently ended up being unsuccessful in that. So this is sort of not exactly the beginning of where that story started to get told. But again, it is, I give them credit. It is a thing where it's a very daring thing to do in wrestling history, that somebody's going out on the sentimental tour as somebody just turned hated heel. But what's hilarious is that all the things they never acknowledged in real time, they're acknowledging now. You know, like, oh, the crowd crapped on him. The crowd crapped on the spinner belt, whatever. I still remember the Sunday Night Submission WrestleMania 22 post show where I said, they were zooming in. There were out of 13,000 people in that crowd, there were about 100 people that were happy that John Cena beat Triple H. And by gum, they zoomed in on every last one of them. They could have done a wide shot when Hulk Hogan was the champion, right? They could have done a wide shot with any of these other champions and found people happy. They had to do creative camera work. But now it's, oh, you all hated me at the time. So it's like all the things they would never admit at the time, they're admitting to now. I find that part of it hilarious.
That is pretty hilarious, but it's also nice that, like, you know, they actually did it and didn't leave that out on the table. They could have very easily just done, like, the farewell tour and, like, you know, the Goodwill Ambassador tour and never gone there, that they left all of this dangling and never addressed. The fact that they are addressing it, I'm happy with that. That, you know, they're making a reference to going back to saying, like, you know, he was hated and all this stuff, and that, you know, dare I say, whitewashing it and acting like, oh, that, because for the longest time they were just gonna go with it, seemed like that's what they were gonna do. But it's like this run where everyone's loving Cena, and I'm like, they didn't always love him. And right. I think this is a story that is still playing out. I think there's a story to be told that John Cena does win. I think we're gonna get shenanigans out the wazoo here, however it is. I think it's the end of it, John Cena is going to win. He is going to get number 17. And then you're going to get the Cody Rhodes. He's going to cut one of them crying promos that he likes to do, that he let everybody down. And this whole arc's going to end with Cena putting Cody Rhodes over and then cementing him and shaking his hand that he is the next guy. That is, and then John rides off into the sunset as a babyface. A lot of people think like his last match will be for the championship. I could very much see his last match being a tag match with Cody Rhodes at the end of the day.
Maybe.
Something to that effect.
But yeah, where by the way, like,
you know, gives the rub to somebody, gives him the rub.
The circuitous whole thing of when, you know, WWE and the rub, if he gives Cody the rub at the end of the year here, about 20 months or so after Cody ended the longest, most interminable world championship run of the modern era with Roman Reigns, that would be similar to 2013 at WrestleMania when The Rock crowned John Cena as the next big guy, holds his hand in the air. I'm passing the torch to John Cena in 2013. The WWE right. is very right. funny when it comes to the timing, aren't they?
Yeah, no, yeah, you're absolutely correct on that. And it's just like, he's already the guy. Like, you know, there's the yeah. smart marks. I know they'll be like, oh, I want like Jacob Fatu to murder.
Yeah.
I just picked a random name to take Cena out in his last match, make him a star. But we know that's not how they do things. Yeah. Just like, that's how I would do it, but that's not how they do things. So it's going to be something to like, there's going to be an arc at this where John realizes the error of his ways. And then, you know, I mean, he could just lose too, but I don't see them investing all this into the
there's
heel
no
turn
money in that.
To just yeah. have him lose. There's something, there's no money in that. They want Cena out on the red carpet with that belt. You know, they want him, they want Hollywood Cena basically to yeah. take that belt around with them. And my whole argument with this though, is they could have done all of this without The Rock. They didn't yeah. need that whole, you know, they didn't need that whole The Rock turning heel or whatever. They absolutely could have just, or wanting Cody's soul. They could have just done the ending to Elimination Chamber. Cody could have come out there, shook Cena's hand, pointed at WrestleMania, being like, you know, oh my God, I'm excited to face you. Cena would be like, yeah, you know, really excited, and then just kicked him in the nuts and just ended on like, oh, and they, the Rock part was completely unnecessary. And and Travis Scott, I could care less about. Only thing I know about him is people got killed at his concert.
Well, yeah, I've never liked him because of that. And then he took liberties with Cody when he was in the ring. I will say, with The Rock being there, that was a thing.
You put
where
those two on the same page. People died at his concert, and he took liberties with Cody Rhodes in the ring. That's great.
That's the sign of being a wrestling fan, right? That's how seriously I take the squared circle.
I love it.
I'm like Gunther. The squared circle is sacred. But I will say, as far as The Rock being there, because they've gone out of their way as a company to try to compare this to the Hogan turn in 96 to the NWO, and there is something about The Rock being there for Cena's turn that, like, he, in this instance, The Rock sort of serves the purpose of Hall and Nash, sort of like, if you're joining somebody else in villainy, it kind of makes it bigger. There's a certain argument to be had. I'm actually relatively sympathetic to that argument, but I do think The Rock inserted himself into this thing here. And I do think that, again, the fact that that part of it has been dropped since then, I promise you it won't be dropped at WrestleMania, because they're smart enough to know it cannot be dropped at WrestleMania. The Rock has to figure into this. And for as much as Drew McIntyre, mostly on social media, has been hinting towards, you know, himself potentially joining up with The Rock, maybe in that big schmoz at the end, maybe Drew McIntyre is one of the ones that is, you know, is able to land the fatal blow on Cody or whatever the case may be. That then sets it up. It's interesting that when they were on TV, Cody and McIntyre, you know, relatively recently here, they acknowledged ties between them in the past. I don't think that they acknowledged that they were actually, I think, two-time tag team champions and unified tag team champions at that, back in the early 2010s, that you cannot do a feud with it between those two guys if that doesn't come into play. If that, because, you know, and McIntyre being like, hey, I was the bigger star at the time, but you leapfrogged me. That's not fair, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this is going to be a very good match. It'll be super schmozzy like it was last year. This is going to be sort of the reverse mirror image of what we saw last year, the whole Avengers Endgame thing in Philadelphia, except this time it's going to be the bad guy that comes out on top. It's going to be Cena.
So it's going to be Infinity War.
I'm not familiar enough with the reference, but sure. Okay.
Infinity War is the Avengers where the bad guy won, where Thanos won and beat all the Avengers.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you know, so that,
well, or it could be Doomsday, just a freaking mess that has been rewritten seven times over again because the person who they were going to push got arrested and they had to redo the entire story. And now none of it makes sense. And the fans are like kind of like giving up on it. You know, there's some comparisons there, too.
That sounds a lot more like the Fed, to be honest with you. So I can see that being the case. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be. You know, it's going to be what it is. I don't know how much of a premium I'm going to place on catching all of this live this weekend, but I have Peacock, so I will end up catching it more or less, you know, at least not long after it happens, and we'll see. And I hope to be pleasantly surprised. There is the chance for that for me anyways, because my expectations are rock bottom for the other, you know, matches on the card outside of the three that I mentioned, the two legitimate main events and the legitimate semi-main event from Saturday night, the World Championship match. So we'll see how it plays out. Any other thoughts you have that we didn't get to yet, Jake?
No, it's always a pleasure to do this and really happy to sit down and talk to you in light of events of the past week or so for both of us. So yes. It's pretty cool to sit there and talk to a friend and be able to, you know, even if we, you know, vehemently disagree on certain things, you know, that's the beauty of the fact that we can disagree and, you know, agree to disagree on stuff, and it makes it fun. And you're one of my favorite people to have a witty banter with back and forth on this. It is WrestleMania. I will watch it live as I always have. Just a tradition that is there that I do. Even the bad ones, you know, it's the part of, you know, part of the culture of my life. It's funny when I told my family I wasn't coming to Easter, and my aunt showed up on said, what time's your show? I'm like, oh, there's events all day. And and I saw her on Monday. She goes, you're really not coming for Easter? I looked at her dead to rights, and I said, it's not my fault they put Easter on WrestleMania Sunday.
Well, you know, right back at you on all of that. And again, you are, if I was to describe somebody in a way of like, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody described like this, but you're like my weird thoughts twin. I'll have a weird thought about something and be like, there's one person in the world that's going to pop for this, and it's going to be Jake Digman. And there's a lot of times.
And I appreciate it every time.
Yes. And I send it to you and you laugh like I know you're going to. And I just, in light of the events, which actually we covered a bit last week, myself and Ben Chu on the show here, as we were announcing about next week's live NFL draft coverage, which we're going to be doing that night, which is going to be dedicated to the memory of great FDH Lounge dignitaries Ken Detweiler and Anthony Patrone. And again, you and I last week having the sad responsibility of being at Anthony's wake. And again, I want to thank you here, as I have previously, of like you helping to make that a lot easier for me. Just absolutely, you know, gutting for me personally. And certainly I know for you and the other friends and family and whatever, Anthony at just 45 years old, far too soon. And again, Anthony and Ken, so sad to see both of them go. And we will be spending some time on NFL draft night talking about that as we are dedicating the live show in their memory. So it's just always, you know, it's great. You know, out of the folks from the old gang, the old Sports Talk Network alums, you know, it's just it's great to have the friendships that still endure. It's painful when two guys like that leave the scene prematurely, but so rewarding to still have friends like you in this world, Jake.
I appreciate the kind words, Rick. And, you know, as we get older, you learn to appreciate. I appreciate more the friendships that I've had that we've been able to. cultivate over the year, and I don't take any of them for granted. I say to people a lot of times that I have had a fortune to have a blessed life, that I've done a lot of very, very cool things. And you, my friend, have been a part of a lot of those things that were in there. And, you know, we'll keep the memory of our friend will be with us always. And it's funny, I didn't tell you this that night, obviously, for reasons, but when we were, I believe Anthony would have appreciated this, that so I see our friends Tony and Leah, right? And mm-hmm. I walk over there and I see Leah, and I haven't seen them since their wedding, I'm pretty sure. Okay. And I see her, I'm like, and Leah sees me, and she gives a hug, and we start talking, and it's like, I'm really happy to see you, but mm-hmm. our friend is lying in a casket. But I'm really happy to see you. But our friend isn't like, and it was just this really weird dichotomy of like emotions where I'm like, I want to be happy to see you. But then I turn to the right and there's our friend. And I'm like, I could just see Anthony and his sense of humor of knowing him being like, seeing there's some sense of like humorous irony in there where it's just like, oh man, like I want to be happy to see my friend, but I don't want to be happy to see you under, I don't want to see you under these circumstances.
No, right, I get now.
Where we're at, but it's just like, but I'm also just happy to see
you. That's how I felt. Yeah, that's how I felt. I was happy to see like, you guys. You know, you guys and Joel Lindway and Tony and Leah and Tony's father, and just was great to see them. And it's always great to see Matt Patrone, but certainly not under those circumstances. But it's a thing where, you know, having been at some of your wrestling watch parties, having met a lot of your friends, and I still go back to when they used to do the cruiserweight wrestling in the WWE. I still remember trolling your one big guy friend who was a weekend wrestler who hated the cruiserweight stuff. I remember trolling it. About how great the cruiserweight wrestling is and everything. That guy would get so mad at me, you know, but it was like, you are cut, seeing you with those friends, me with the friends that I have, we're cut from the same cloth. Me and you, brother, we are trillionaires in the ways that count most in life, man. As far as the people around us, we are trillionaires, brother. And it's a great thing.
I would agree with you on that. And, you know, anytime, it's always an honor and a privilege for me to sit down here in the lounge with you. And, you know, any chance we can do it again. Now we're on video. It's, you know, the irony is we started on video, then we went to audio, and now we're back to video.
It's a thing where, and I can't tell you, doing the live show next week for the NFL draft and not needing the infrastructure of Sports Talk Network to do it, I can't tell you what that means right there, brother. Not to have to lean on anybody from back at the station to have to be able to pull something like this off feels like $1 million. So,
you know what? We were so far ahead of their time, they just didn't realize what they
had. Lindway said that to me last week, the great Joel Lindway. Yes. Yeah, he said that. And
we had podcasts before podcasts were cool.
Yeah.
Like we were really trendsetters, and Paul had no idea what he had there and no way how to utilize it properly, which is what it is.
Capitalization, business sense, whatever, all the things that weren't there at the time. You know, subsequently we try to build these other things here, and I've been so happy and so honored that if there's one thing over the years that has sort of been a clearinghouse for Lounge alumni, it's been this show. And that's one of the greatest honors in doing it, is to continue to basically hold that group together and bring in folks like you. And yes, Ken and Anthony, who are dearly departed here at this point in time, and so many of the other great ones from back in the day. But Jake, it is always a pleasure to have you on. I look forward to the next time that we get a chance to do so. I won't hold my breath, and it will be for the lead up to All In, because you probably won't be watching any of the stuff for that. But we will find another occasion, maybe SummerSlam season or maybe some time before then, God willing. But always a pleasure, Jake, and I can't thank you enough for making time here on the show. I really appreciate it, as always, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Really appreciate it, Jake. Thanks, buddy. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1824.